puts that down. Oh, yes! It's a try, and it's a try to Roberts. It's an incredible try. He flew above Worth there on that occasion. Unbelievable.
Rabbitohs Radio Podcast. Grant Chappell, Steve Maven, Darren Brown.
Chaps is red hot here, so my phone was running hot there for a while. But
could you catch him?
Well, only if I got a bit of a start.
It's great for rugby league, but more importantly, it's great for the mighty Rabbitohs.
Welcome to another edition of Rabbitohs Radio. My name is Grant Chappell. I'm joined by two former Rabbitohs, Darren Brown, Steve Maven. What's doing, boys?
Hello, chaps. Hello, Brownie.
Yeah, g'day, boys. What's happening?
Not too much, mate. Just trying to get through this lockdown process, as we all are. It was a big Easter long weekend, and I think everyone did a pretty good job staying indoors and getting out here and there for exercise. But if you ever did get out on the road there, the cars were way down. You could hardly see a car on the road at times over that Easter long weekend, boys.
Yep. Yeah, I had a hit of golf yesterday, and there was no one on the road. Made it easy to get there and back at the lovely Camden Lakeside. The greens and fairways were just like carpet. It was perfect. And we all kept our social distancing, made sure we sanitised.
They're only playing groups of two?
Groups of two, and they've got a marshal there to make sure that you don't interact and no one in the pro shop's standing close. So it is good because I went out and walked 18 holes and really enjoyed it. Had a hit out there with the boys. So, yeah, so you've still got to get out and live your life and do a bit of exercise and get out and smell the fresh air.
Yeah, it is fresh too because it's not much pollution there. Not many cars on the road, so
no, that's right.
True.
What about you, Brian? Stayed home 2 days?
Stayed home 2 days, yeah. Couple of big days. In recovery mode now.
In a bit of recovery, yeah. You gotta knock a few beers back when it's
it's me young bloke's
birthday. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Shout out to the young fella.
Happy birthday, Tyler.
Tyler Brown, 22. He's gone back up to Foster now. He's working up in Foster, so he had to get up this morning and head up to Foster.
Good
kids, your boys, Tyler and Jaden. Solid boys.
Yeah,
solid boys. Now, have we got any shout-outs?
And don't forget my daughter, Charlie, too.
Oh, yeah, and a Charlie. Yeah. Shout-out to Charlie. a lovely young lady she is.
We can't forget the girls. Now, shout-outs are brought to you by Export Freight Systems, boys. What do you got for us, Mava?
I've got one for Paul Nifty Neville, the brother of Dirty Neville, Daryl Neville. Now, we work with him at the Wharves, but he listens every week and he tells us what he thinks of the show, honestly. He gives us the feedback that we need. Most of it's good. Usually always it's good. But, yeah, shout out to you, Paulie Neville, and also to the great Charlie Friff. If you follow us on our socials, you might have saw we put out a little clip of a snapshot of Redfern Oval, and it featured the great man Charlie Friff. Then it brought back some fond memories for me and Brownie, maybe not so much for you, chaps. You're a little bit young.
Oh, he's a hard man. I watched the footage closely, and, geez, he was built well, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Big lad.
He's built like big shitty house, boy.
Yeah. And the snapshot of the Redfern Oval just brought back fond memories. I think mate of ours, Henny, said, peanuts in the shell, sugar-coated, you know, and we'd be running around. So I always wanted the sugar-coated. And then
the doubles.
Get the double.
The tri-doubles.
You know what they used to do back in the day at the footy that you probably forget is people would bring boxes full of cut-up newspapers and throw them up in the air when you score.
Yeah.
Confetti.
Yeah. The streamers.
They don't do that anymore, do they?
What about the streamers?
The streamers.
Yeah, the streamers.
That was a big go back in the day.
Yeah.
No one wants to clean up anymore, so they don't bring it in. Maybe they don't let you bring it in.
No, those were the good old days. And just on Charlie, he is always a regular at our reunions. He gets to the reunions quite often. So he's a good man, Charlie.
Star of the late 70s, early 80s, and we weren't that successful in that era. But
no. Chaps, you got any shout-outs, mate?
Yeah, well, I might give a shout-out to a couple of me mates. I don't normally hit them up. A couple of stars that grew up around Maroubra there. I asked them to retweet that Cam Murray show, and we had a bit of success. Plenty of people jumped on board now to listen to that one. It was a great episode last week. Mark Matthews, who's a big wave surfing star, overcome a lot of horrific injuries. He's a great guy. Rennie Matua always lends his hand. Kobe Abbott and Richie Vass. Even Cam Murray helped us promote that one. So
yeah, all the boys.
Shout out to all you guys out there.
And the Rabbitohs themselves, they retweeted it and they shared it on their story.
Johnny Sutton always gives us a hand, retweeting.
Sutton, yep.
Who's back on the tools, by the way. Boys, he's back. Doing a bit of carpet laying.
Oh, is he?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't got it. Yeah, they're not getting paid, so he's got to pay the bills. He's got two young kids and probably a mortgage like everyone else. So Sato and the boys are back on the tools.
Yeah, so a lot of famous people are helping us out, sharing, telling people about the podcast. But if you're listening now, we need you to tell people. Tell a friend, tell someone in your family that's a South supporter that you're listening to this show and it's great, or we think it is. And word of mouth is also a strong tool to promote us. Okay, let's move on to the Rabbitohs news brought to you by the Juniors, our friends at the Juniors. Now, they're struggling at the moment. Hopefully, we can get through this virus and we can all get back up there, have a train, have a meal, have a drink. First thing is, Blake Solly made a statement about the people bagging the NRL for the restart date. Now, they've made a restart date for late May.
28th.
Yep, and now people are jumping up and down about it. But a good point that Blake made is that NRL aren't just doing this to make money. They're doing it to try and save the game and save the people's jobs around the game. Now, the Rabbitohs employ 60 people. Now, the majority of those have been put off. So the sooner we can get back on the field, the sooner those people can get their jobs back. And so it's not just the NRL and the executives and the players. It's all the staff. It's all the people that are at work around the game that need their jobs.
You can times that by 16 with all the other clubs. All the other clubs. And also, not to the extent of 60, but I'm sure a lot of those second-grade sides and fielders right down to those other grades below that would have people.
Yeah. Now, it does seem
employed.
It does seem a little bit premature, but the news is positive at the moment that the curve is slowing, and let's hope that by the end of May that other sports are starting to say, we should be doing it as well, get the ball rolling. So it's not set in concrete now. It's not to say it's going to happen, but you know, there are reasons why we're trying to get the game going again.
I think even the New Zealand Warriors are going to get an exemption to do some travelling, but I think up Queensland, north of the border, they're Premier was against it, to be honest, but we expect that from Queenslanders, boys. Yeah. They've always been a thorn in our side down here, but we might have to cut them off. Eh?
Cut them off?
13. Go back to the old 13-team competition back in 89.
Oh, Sydney teams.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Queenslanders, what we didn't mention at the start of the show is the great guest we've got on today. One of them is the great Johnny Lewis, and tells us a story about when he walked out of Lang Park with a Blues cap on. Him and Jeffrey Fenwick, and an imbecile fan crash tackled him.
I told you they're imbeciles.
And that ties it in. And also,
we love it. We love our Queensland listeners.
And also, ironically, this is all tying in quite well. The Rabbitohs this week put out a Q&A story about South legend Ian Roberts. And we're going to post that on our episode webpage, which, as we've spoken about before, our episode webpage is like an interactive experience for you. You can press pause at any time and go and have a look at that. So if you want to go and read that story now, or look at the photos we've got of the great Johnny Lewis, some videos, you can go and have a look. But we have the great Ian Roberts on the line, and we had him before the Rabbitohs put their story out, but it's not a competition. So just have a listen to the Ian Roberts interview now.
Great kick from Craig Coleman, but a magnificent take. We saw Ian Roberts do this at the semi-finals with SCG last year. One of the tallest men on the field, if not the tallest. He doesn't have to leave the ground by far to get up above the likes of Gary Worth. Worth was running backwards. He was just unsighted and put off maybe by the goalpost at first, but brilliantly read by Roberts, coming from certainly well and truly onside. One of the few occasions that you see this incident where a bomb situation brings about a try in 1987. But here comes the big man now, and he doesn't have to leave that ground by too far. But what a beautiful take to put it down. And again, the try is being scored right underneath the black dot.
We're lucky enough to have the big iron, Ian Roberts, former Rabbitoh, on the line. Welcome to Rabbitoh's Radio, Ian.
Nice to be here, mate. Nice to be here.
No worries, mate. Now, where are you from, and what was it like growing up there, bud?
Well, I'm actually a Pommy. I was born in London. But I grew up, basically, in Maroubra. But my parents came out here when I was about 2 years old, mate. That was part of that £10 POM scheme back in the 60s. So, I'm basically, apart from being born over there, I'm basically an Aussie. But I grew up around Maroubra, Coogee. Ended up in Botany, so I ended up playing for Mascot. That's how I came through the juniors there. That's how I got graded with South.
Okay, mate, it's Mavo here. How you going, buddy?
Good, Mavo. Very well, mate. Very good.
Mate, I remember you as a young man playing in the junior sides, and you were a standout. you're very hard to miss, mate. You're a big lump of a lad. And
that's very good for my ego, Mavo.
One of my first memories, though, was when you broke my brother's collarbone at Snape Oval. when you were playing for Maroubra Diggers and he was playing for Maroubra. And I just remember he was...
You hold a grudge for a long time, mate.
Does he? No,
well, I think my brother does. He said he was never the same after that, but I just remember him. We're only young blokes. He was only about 12, and he's coming off screaming. And so, yeah, you were doing damage as a young fella and doing damage as an older bloke too.
I don't know how to approach that question.
Yeah, no. <I'll>...
all good, mate. All good. I wasn't, as a junior player, I mean, it wasn't until I hit my late teens, like 15, 16, that I actually started to excel a bit at rugby league. I mean, when I was just a young bloke, I mean, I was pretty crappy, and not crappy. I was no standout by a long way. My mum's got pictures of me when I was 5 and 6, actually sat playing in the mud on the field. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I was one of those kids. It wasn't until I got to my late teens that I probably started to show a bit more ability.
And then we'll fast forward to when I came into grade in 86. You actually passed me the ball for my first try in grade. It was at Redfern Oval. I'll never forget it. And
did I set you up?
You did, as you did many a time. And I just remember the roar of the crowd when I scored under the post. Because as you know, when you're playing in the junior grand finals and that, you don't hear that noise. And I'll never forget that sound, mate, when you did that. So thank you for that.
And what grade was that, Mova? What grade was that?
Mate, I'm pretty sure we were playing in the 2023s. Because I think
was that in 86?
86, yes. Yes,
because because I only played in 86. What happened was because I was playing mostly first grade, and I played right up until the last 5 games in first grade. But then they, if you remember, they had a pretty like a flash hot. Where South had a pretty flash hot under 23 side, and there was a whole load of the guys playing first grade who were eligible to play under 23s. As long as you played 3 of the last 5 games in that grade, you're eligible to play in semi-finals, because South under 23 that year were leading. And they dropped me, they dropped Wayne Chisholm back, they dropped Ross Harrington back. Who else? It was about 5 or 6 of us they dropped back. When we had for that semi-finals team for the under 23s, they had a shit-hot team. We had a shit, like, we...
Yeah.
We ended up playing Penrith in the grand final.
We did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've spoken to Mark Geyer on the show, and he remembers it too, because he was filthy.
He mentioned the South stacked the side, actually.
Yeah, and he mentioned you. The big iron was coming back, and well, you know, I was happy that they did, because I played in that game as well, and we beat Penrith 13-0 in that side. For Penrith had Mark Geyer, I think Spud Carroll, Tony Butterfield. So yeah.
They I think it's kind of weird that after that under 23s game, not weird, but I left the next day. I flew out to play for Wigan. I had an off season in Wigan. I spent 6 months over there just after that grand final.
Well, seeing as how you mentioned it, I have made a note of that here. Apparently, in your first game for Wigan, you came on after 8 minutes and made 59 tackles.
Wow!
And so these Wigan fans would have been going, "Look at this bloke, this giant of a man who can do all these tackles, runs like the wind."
I was just dirty, mate, that I had to do them. I was just like, because the problem is that they weren't real intense on their defence back then. They were all about attack. But in saying that, I mean, I will say that was, I don't know if that was the right number, 59. I do remember, because like, it was a Tuesday night, the game. I only flew in like on the Monday, and we were playing a semi-final for the Lancashire Cup. I think we might have been playing St Helens. But yeah, that, it was. They had Graham Lowe was the Wigan coach at that point. He was just trying to solve that old English problem, and then only being focused on attack and not defence. Yeah, so I remember like the first half a dozen games I played over there, I ended up stacking up like quite large tackle counts, because it was just But that didn't continue. That didn't continue.
Now, that's pretty unusual to play in the off season these days, being such a professional game. Was that quite common?
Well, you could then, because rugby league was a winter sport both in the southern and the northern hemisphere. So you could go from finishing the competition here to going to the start of the competition over there. Where I think Super League now, that they play in conjunction with our game. Yeah. So there's, you know what I mean?
It overlaps now, doesn't it?
They play in the summer over there now, so they're playing the same time as us. That's why players, unless they're going over there to stay there for an extended contract, that's why players aren't playing off seasons over there anymore.
And you just had the one stint over there. Did you go any other off seasons, or that was it?
No, I just had the one stint. I actually, it's kind of weird because after the one stint, I think when I was there, Wigan won like four of the five competitions over there. They were a pretty shit hot team. And then Lowy was there. Lowy coached them for a further 3 years. And I think of the twice after I, not when I was there, the 2 years after, they won all five of the five competitions. They were red hot.
Yeah, pretty hot side. I also went over there at the end of my career and played for Salford. I had 3 years over there. So yeah, no, it's good lifestyle over there, and they're good people as well.
Very, very different lifestyle, and they approach their game and everything very differently to us. And even the crowd, it's a different atmosphere over there.
It is. Yep.
Yeah, I loved it over there. I had a wonderful time.
Yeah, mate. Well, we'll take you back a little bit. You made your debut in 1986. Round one against the Dragons. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
The thing that stands out for me for that game is when I was growing up, Craig Young used to be a bit of a hero to me.
Yep.
It's funny, Craig Young and those boys were my two big idols growing up. And we played against them that first game. It must have been 5 or 10 minutes into the game. Craig Buck, we had a scrum and the scrum broke up and Craig Young grabbed me and just like knuckled me in the face, just punched me in the face. And I remember standing, this has happened twice in my career. I remember standing there just thinking, I know what to do. This is Craig Young. you don't hit Craig Young. The other time was when I played for Wigan, we were playing Warrington in a John Player final and Les Boyd, that was his last season. And like, he was an absolute superman to me. We 10 minutes into the game, I play the ball or he played the ball, but he grabbed me with both arms and he headbutted me and split all my nose and all my wet and face. I just remember thinking, it was the same sensation. I remember just thinking, what do I do? This is Les Boyd. I mean, I'm not going to hit Les Boyd. Like, it was always that hero worship thing. It's just like, that St. George game, we won too. I think that first round we won fairly like convincingly too. I had when I first came in grade in 86, for the first half a dozen games, I had a wonderful, wonderful experience. I was playing really well. It was all new to me. The back half of the season, I kind of fell away. My form fell away. I just, I don't even know what it is. I think entering the competition, enthusiasm and the excitement pumped me up for every game. But the second half, I don't know what it was. My form fell away. It's just, I mean, that's probably a familiar story.
Yeah,
and well, the team you came into, as well as our good mate Bundy, was in the front row. Les Davidson, Mario Fenwick, mates like Ross Harrington. So you know, you came into a good era of good mates.
Hooky, Wayne Chisholm, Tugger. Neil Baker. It was a really quite a unique time.
Was Gus in that side as well, Phil Gill?
Mate, Gus, exactly right, mate. Gus has basically trained us that first year. That was his first and only year at South. But George Pickens had taken over that year because if you remember back there, the club had kind of not run out of money, but George coached for free, basically.
Yeah,
he did. But in saying that, Gus ended up coaching the team. I don't know if when they signed Gus, they knew they were getting someone who was like so astute about the game and knew the game inside and out. But it was definitely an advantage because he basically ended up coaching the team.
Yeah, right. And then that year you scored your first try. Do you remember when that was?
I've no idea. When was that, mate? Mate, can I tell you?
Yep.
I think I've only scored... I can only remember scoring about 3 or 4 tries in my whole career.
Yeah.
And two of those were in the same game when I was playing for Australia. We were playing the French.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I can tell you, according to NRLstats.com, that it was in the semi-final against the Tigers in 86 when we got beat.
Really? I waited that long for a semi-high.
Yeah. So I was hoping you'd have a story about, you know, running about 30 or 40 metres up the middle, but you don't even remember it.
Okay.
Well, that's quite rare that a first try in first grade isn't remembered, but, you know, you were busy doing a lot of other stuff like bashing blokes and offloading.
Too many knocks around the head, mate.
Yeah, no. I meant bashing blokes in defence legally, not.
I can actually remember. my memories of it when I was only a young fella, but I can remember catching a few high balls and scoring tries.
Tugger and Neil Bakes, we had that kind of work. In 87, that kind of kicked off because I was...
Yeah, I think you scored a couple in 87, yeah.
Yeah, there's one game in Henson Park that comes to mind that I was playing. Yeah, you jumped above the pack, AFL style, and scored.
We were playing East.
And I remember that game because I scored as well. Anyway, but it's not about me.
That game was a bit of a turning point for the form of the team because we hadn't been going too well. And then things kind of turned around at us.
Yeah, because the Roosters sort of fired us up quite often, didn't it? We wanted to beat them.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And Henson Park was always seen to be kind to us. So. Yeah,
I agree with that, mate. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, mate, we'll move on. Like I've always said, you are one of the toughest blokes I ever played with. And Jack Gibson described you as the best front rower in the game back in the day. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that being said, mate. I mean, I'll take that as a compliment, but I'll take that as a compliment, mate. I don't feel that, and I don't believe. It's wonderful that someone else does. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're very humble, mate. But I always used to say that when you would play, we would usually win, and when you didn't play, we would sometimes struggle because you would hurt guys in defence with your rock hard defence. But even when you ran the ball, blokes would be suffering trying to contain you because you were that big and fast. Trying to tackle you was an effort in its own.
Yeah, I wish I'd been able to keep that speed my whole career. So I had a few injuries that kind of knocked me around a bit, and my groin and my knee. But yeah, as a younger bloke, I can say honestly, I had a bit of toe, so I was a bit deceivingly quick.
My word, you did. I mean, I remember you running down like a winger down the sideline, and people were just going, "Wow, this big guy can run." And so.
I do remember. I think it might have even been 86. Was it 86 or 88 when we won the sevens? And I do remember I chased down, it was just one of those games. In the semi-final, we were playing St George, and I chased down a winger, and we won the game by a couple of points, and that was right at the end of the game. I'm just trying to think who it was. Anyway, yeah, I mean, listen to me pat myself on the back.
Ah, mate, we love it. We love it.
You deserve it, mate.
Mavo does it here every week. That's all right. Now, you talked about injuries there, and it slowed you down towards the back end of your career, but can you talk us through the list of injuries that you had, mate? Because rugby league is a gladiatorial and an absolutely brutal sport, and is there a sport like it in the world?
My major problem was I had a groin injury in 89 that kind of plagued me for about 3 years after that, because I ended up not only having it on the left, having it both sides, I had it on the left side originally, then when I went over to Manly, I missed out on the 1990 tour because I tore my groin in the semi-final. We were playing... Manly were playing the Broncos, and I tore it. I'm fairly confident I would have gone on that tour. But then I had playing for Manly. I had knee issues. I mean, I had two reconstructions in the same knee, and it kind of the knee thing I never really ever got over. I always struggled with it. I mean, look, quite literally now. I mean, I can't run. I literally can't run. I mean, I hobble around fantastic. Like, yeah, it's just, I mean, but you know, someone my age and who has played at level and the amount of games I've played, that would be, you know, and the position I play, that would be quite a familiar story. You know, like, I'm sure Bundy and Hookie are equally have had their own issues.
Bundy's in the same boat, and yeah, he can't run.
Yeah, it's very frustrating, mate. I mean, it sounds like a weird thing. I mean, I'm 55 this year. I literally can't run.
Yeah.
I mean, I it's like I'm running on my knees.
Mm. Yeah. You had a great career. You also played rep footy. You won four State of Origin series between 1990 and 1994, and also went on a kangaroo tour, mate. How was that experience?
I'd say that kangaroo tour, for me personally, I mean, my situation... My privately too, mate, because up until that point, me being gay was like the worst kept secret in rugby league. But the media were always really respectful of me. They were all I could tell many people wanted to ask that question. Many reporters did, but never asked that question. They were always really respectful. But I did promise myself in 94 that I was going to go on that tour and just be me, just be like me, and that's inclusive of being gay.
Yeah.
Terry Hill was my roommate, and like, I've known Terry forever. Like, Terry's a very good friend, and Terry's always known I'm gay as well. He's like, he was totally fine. But at the end of 94, I kind of came out publicly. But that, it was that 10 weeks on tour. It was just wonderful because all the guys were so accepting and so inclusive, and it was, and just the whole camaraderie of being on a tour. They were such unique experiences, those Kangaroo tours. I only went on the one, but it was such an incredible time. I mean, it was probably the best playing time of my life. It was wonderful.
What were some of the games that were played on that tour, mate? If you can refresh our memory, was that the one where Ricky Stewart put someone away to win the series?
That was 1990.
We got beat in the first game we played at Wembley. We'd been going through all the lead-up games. We'd actually, we'd been literally butchering all the teams we played. Then we played at Central Park when we played Wigan. That was a big, that was a bit dusty. That what I mean by that was it was a really dirty game, quite niggly. There was a lot of shit happening in the tackles from their side, not from our side. Then we lost at Wembley. We went up to Old Trafford. And we just got away in Old Trafford. That's where I came off halfway through the first half because I thought I'd split all my face. I thought, and they were worried that I'd lost the sight of my eye because I had this split right from my forehead down through my eye through over my cheek. It was a really nasty. And I was just a bit. I didn't go back on, but we just got away with that game. And in the third game we trashed him in the third game.
Yeah, I think that was at Allen Road. Yeah.
Yeah, very good, mate.
Yeah.
And then the French side of things was just a walkout. Although we did have one game against, and it was a real, like, it got a lot of publicity because it was a really dirty game. Like, we had like three or four all in brawls. We had like supporters jumping up. It was crazy. We had supporters coming off out of the stand and getting involved in the fight. I'm just trying to hear that was. I'm sorry, guys. I wish I remember it sharper.
That's all right, mate. Now we've skipped over these other clubs because we are here on Rabbitohs Radio. Your Manly days and your Cowboys days, and we've just touched on your rep career. Now, who, in your opinion, was the best player you played with in all those teams, in the rep teams, or for the Rabbitohs, or the other couple of sides, mate?
It's really hard, mate. It's hard to say those things, like for organising stuff and like and being marshalled around the field, blokes like Ricky Stewart and that were outstanding. He gets things done behind the play. Twos, like you think of Twos, you think about how Twos, the size of Twos, but mate, he is adamant. You know, he was so courageous, mate, and so fearless. Players like that. Blokes like Bundy Marsh, you have so much respect for Bundy because Bundy was quietly spoken. Never took shit off, like he was.
Yeah.
But off the field, he was such a gentleman. He's such a gentleman.
Oh, and he still is. Yeah, we work with him at the Wharves. He still is. He's just.
Oh right.
Yeah.
He's the best.
He's just such a decent human being. Yep. I'm not blowing smoke up your ass here, mate. Are you like what you did? Like when you came into grade, mate, that was kind of like to be around that and to see how much you excelled and just how far and what you did was kind of like it's. They're wonderful stories to be a part of. I mean, I include myself in that story because I was a part of that as well. But it's just to see your rise and stuff like that. It's there are so many of those little stories, and that's what I mean about the camaraderie. Well, like I think what people don't realise is when you retire from league, this first two, three, four years is hell because there's none of that training stuff. There's no camaraderie. I think that's what I missed than anything when I retired was just having a group of people. You had similar likes, and it's just like you were working to something. It took me a couple of years to get over, retirement.
Mm. Yeah, thanks for that wrap, mate. And we used to both live in Botany and carpool to training, so we do go a long way back. So I do appreciate that, mate. And I'm glad you remember. And then we're just moving on to another topic that you have had some trouble with. That you've been knocked out a dozen times, and you've found out you've got some scarring on the brain. And you said that you thought there was something wrong. Can you tell us what you've been feeling in that department?
Because after I retired, a couple of years after that, I got into I did an arts degree in acting. As I went to NIDA, and I'd always been part of acting when I was at school, part of the ensemble. But when I left school, sport kind of took off. But anyway, I had always been okay for doing auditions and that, like getting lines down after a couple of days is not a problem. I lived over in the States for about 6-7 years. And when I was working over there, I just noticed, I'm now saying, you know, this is when I'm about late 30s, early 40s. I just noticed that I didn't feel as confident going into auditions as sharp about getting my lines down. I had a couple of episodes over there. The thing that really set me off is I kind of lost time. It's where I was, one was quite dangerous, the other one was okay. It was just basically I was driving my car. This sounds like a bit weird to say, but I felt like I was driving my car then without even knowing I was at home. It was almost like I kind of came to sitting on the lounge, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Another time happened, and about a month later it happened again, but I was at home. I was in the shower. The next moment I was kind of sitting on the lounge again. I was just like, I just didn't know what had happened or how I got there. Which was quite scary. I mean, if you can imagine, it was quite scary when it happened. Anyway, came back to Sydney because I was quite concerned about it, particularly the second time. And like I said, I hadn't been feeling sharp in auditions about getting my lines down. I was normally okay with that type of thing. I came back to Sydney, spoke to a few doctors, and there was some research being done from La Trobe University in Melbourne. I contacted a couple of the professors there. I became part of a study there where they scan the brain. They do all the cognitive testing and that type of thing on the brain. And it came back positive. Like everything came back positive. They had a sample group of 25 people who hadn't played sport around our ages, and of 25 people who had played contact sport all around our ages, from 50 to 55. The 25 ex-players all came back positive, and only three of the sample group, of the comparable group, came back positive.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was a huge indicator. That's kind of where it's at.
Is there any sort of treatment that you've had to undertake since knowing all this, Ern?
Mate, I've been doing a whole lot of cognitive stuff. They're brain exercises. Yep. That's what they call them. I mean, my brain's the size of a pea, mate, stuck behind my ear. but I mean, it's just about relearning and trying to be a bit proactive.
Keeping sharp.
Yeah. The thing is, I've kind of find it is better to be armed knowing the truth as opposed to just not knowing. Yeah.
Well, that CTE is scary. It is real, and that's why the NRL has brought in all these measures. So if anyone's wondering why they're taking players off all the time, and this is exactly why, because we need to manage it better, because back in our day, it was a brutal game, and it was a badge of honour to get back out there.
That's right, mate. You get knocked out, you sit up on the field, and you run a trainer come back on and hit you in the face with a wet sponge, and off you go. There's a game in 87. It was 87, 86. Anyway, we were playing, South were playing Canterbury. It was the Anzac Day. We were playing Canterbury at the Sydney Cricket Ground. And I do remember it was like a beautiful, clear day. And I only noticed because I've seen the replay. But I take the ball up, and then David Gillespie hits me from the blind side and just wipes me out, lose the ball. It irons me out. All I remember is sitting there, and I actually remember this, is looking up, like waking up and looking up, and it was just the sky was really blue. And I was thinking, God, what a beautiful day. and I sat up, and our trainer, Murray, was there. And I just said to him, boy, this is a wonderful day, man. Yeah, they took me off. I do remember. That's one of the times I remember.
Yeah. And, mate, you mentioned before you've done a bit of acting and studied at NIDA, and you've been in shows such as Star Wars, Superman, and Underbelly. Are you still acting these days?
Mate, if I get the work, I'll do it. I hadn't, mate, modesty. I wish I could blow my own trumpet there, mate, but it's acting is, I love it, but, mate, if I had to earn my living from it, I'd go hungry on the street, mate. I mean, I get jobs occasionally. When I was over the States, was wonderful. You know, it was just a bigger pond over there. There was a lot more work being done over there, obviously. I mean, I originally came back because of my issues with my head, but that's like 5 years ago. And my dad was quite ill. My dad's since passed away. So, and I do intend, me and my partner Dan, we do intend going back to LA at some point, or the States. Mm. But at the moment, we just, it's one of those situations, mate. I'd love to be, you know, earning a living solely from acting, but, you know, I'm doing it because I enjoy it.
Yeah,
mate. You mentioned before you came out in 94, 95. So that's about 25 years ago now, mate. How hard was that decision at the time for you?
You were at South when all that was happening. I mean, when I was there, like, it was just it was just uneasy, mate. I wasn't ever in brackets, like, closeted. I was kind of always just doing my own thing anyway. I was always out on the scene, Oxford Street, as a young man and living outside. I just got set up with no one talking about it or people pretending it wasn't a thing or... Yeah, it was tough, mate. But everyone's got their own issues and their own situations that they deal with. That was just mine, mate. I think, yeah, it was just it is what it is, mate. It's such a long time ago. There's a fella, Keegan Hurst, who plays for I think it's Wakefield Trinity over there. He plays first division. He's out right now. He's openly a gay man, and like he's been doing really, really well.
So, yeah, it's a lot more accepted these days, isn't it? And I know you've been a vocal advocate for the gay community, and when the same-sex marriage vote was passed, you would have been pretty happy with that. The times have changed.
They absolutely have, mate. And for the better, mate. I mean, it's just a natural... It's just a progression, you know? It's like it's a good thing. And it's like, yes, times have changed, but it's a good thing. It's just... Just that we, you know, people can now have that conversation without feeling awkward. People can have that conversation, and you know, without feeling uncomfortable or that they may be embarrassing someone. It's a positive thing, mate.
Obviously, we're going through this global pandemic, and it's a pretty unprecedented time in the history of the world. How has it affected you, mate, in your life? Obviously, where have you been working, mate? Has it affected your everyday workplace?
I was doing stuff for the NRL. We had a program running for the NRL that, you know, social responsibilities. It's me and a group of actors, four or five actors. We do like improv. We have a four or five scenes set up, and we get players up involved in the scenes. And the players don't know what to expect, but the five actors kind of know what's going on. It's based around misogyny. Homophobia, like drugs, social media. It's a safer environment for them to get it, you know, in inverted commas, wrong, if you will, because there's no cameras there. And then we break down the scene. We talk about what's happening in the scene. So I've been doing that now for about 3 years. I've been working out at the airport for Virgin for about 5 years. And I've also been doing, like, you know, I do some speaking engagements and that through both of those corporations as well. And acting when I get it, mate. I still do a bit of writing, but that's kind of where I'm at. The whole thing with the pandemic at the moment, I mean, it's affected me as much as it as it has affected most people in the community. We're all crawling the walls because we're all isolating and doing all that. But my story is no different than anyone else, mate. You just got to do the right thing and stay at home.
That's right.
Yeah, obviously, Virgin stood down pretty much its entire workforce.
Absolutely, mate.
Travel's gone from, a couple of hundred planes an hour to nothing, you know. My friend works at the Gold Coast Airport there, and this month they've actually gone from 80 planes, which they normally do a day, they're down to zero now. They're not doing anything.
Yeah, I think Virgin now are doing two flights to Melbourne a day, that's it, from Sydney. Yeah, I mean, it's catastrophic, though, but we are also talking about people's lives. Like, that's the bottom line here. Like, people don't realise, if you're a young person in their 20s and 30s, it's probably not going to affect you. But it's about looking out for the rest of the community. It's people who have had compromised health over the last few years that are in danger. And pensioners, older people.
Yeah. So we've lost the footy for a time being, but hopefully it's coming back soon. Now, I've heard you talk about you've got a soft spot for the Maroon and Whites because you're the success you had at Manly, but you're still a South Sydney boy at heart, I suppose. And so have you had a chance to check out the side this year, the Bunnies side this year?
No, I haven't been to a game this year, mate. But I've been to plenty of games in the last few years. And the reason I didn't go to those games was because of the whole whole virus thing at the start of the year.
Yeah.
But I still got red and green blood. I kind of have a soft spot for all those clubs I played for: South, Manly, the Cowboys, and even Wigan at times. But I'm still a Bunny supporter, mate. Absolutely.
Good on you, mate.
Good man.
That's what we wanted to hear. Red and green blood in the veins. We've all got it here on Rabbitohs Radio and all our listeners as well. So, mate, thanks for your time. Thanks for joining us, buddy.
My pleasure, guys. You take care.
Thanks,
man. I'll see you at the games.
Good on you, mate. Then. See
thanks,
you, buddy.
Mate.
Bye.
Welcome back, listeners. Wasn't that great to listen to the big iron? Ian Roberts, one of the real genuine superstars of the game in the early 90s, late 80s. A guy I used to love going to the footy and watch him. One of the hardest men I've ever seen. I don't know about you, blokes. What about that?
Oh, he was a machine.
He was a machine. And he's our mate. But one of the things we love about telling people stories is when they take us back to a time. And when he mentioned that he got knocked out at the SCG and he's looking up at the blue sky, we're all pictured that and smiled because, our mate Moz, the trainer, come out and he said, "Moz, what a lovely day." So.
And it happened to be another one of our workmates who's a lovely bloke off the field.
Yep.
Cement Gillespie, who
Cement.
We're going to get Cement on eventually when Origin ever gets put on. But
yep.
Yeah, it was great to hear from Big Ian.
Yeah, it was a great chat.
And we might chuff off to another break here on Rabbitohs Radio.
And now that we're all round the bar, and the captain's declared it a quorum, we're thinking our way through the night, and we're having the time of our lives. Throw the empties away, start again, for the boys of South Sydney are together, and we'll drink till the dawn breaks again, and may the sessions of South Sydney last forever.
Okay, listeners, we're lucky enough to have Australia's greatest ever boxing trainer on the line, the great Johnny Lewis. Welcome to Rabbitohs Radio, mate.
Oh, it's a pleasure to talk to good people.
Good on you, Johnny.
Good on you, Johnny. And you're joining us from a friend of yours' coffee shop, we believe.
Oh, mate, I'm confined to barracks, but we do get a little walk, and I walk along the Yamina Beach, and right on the beach there, Johnny Treble is... one of the best barristers I've ever made. He's looked after me and kept me sanity here.
Beautiful part of the world, Yamina. I've got family up there.
Well, say hello to Johnny for us, mate. Yeah, your mate.
We'll do that.
Now, where are you from and what was it like growing up there, John?
Oh, mate, very much a product of the Housing Commission of Erskineville. I say that proudly and... I've always, mate, I was one street away from being a South Sydney supporter, but God got it right, mate. I'm still as royal blue as ever.
Ah, the new down Jets, eh? The old Jets.
The old blue bags.
Yeah, but I got to say that, mate, we're all of us that follow Newtown, we've all jumped on the board as the Red and Greens, and why not? We're the same people from Redfern and Erskineville, Newtown, so...
Yeah. It must have been devastating at the time, though, losing your team, because I know we've been through it, and it was one of the worst things in the world.
You know, it is. It was like a death. It was like a death of a family member, and for a while there, I just didn't take much notice of it. But fortunately for me, Bobby Fulton got me to do a few of the tours with him and so forth, and it was good. It restored my interest in the game, and as I say, we didn't do much about it. We just rolled over, I think. But I did have the pleasure of marching with George Piggins when he had that walk right up to the town hall, and I did that with pride. And I just, to this day, I don't know if there's been a better bloke than George Piggins for what he done for South Sydney. I'll never forget him anyhow.
Yeah, you're right. We all marched then, and I'll never forget it either, mate. But take us back. How did you get into boxing?
Oh, you know, it was certainly the Newtown Police Boys Club, as it was known in them days. And, and I used to walk past Murray Robbins and have a look up there, see if there was anyone doing some workout or sparring and so forth. In them days, they'd bring imports. Stadiums Limited were the only promoters, and they'd bring imports in, and sometimes they'd be in Snowy Robbins' gym, and we'd be talking about that and go in and have a look there. But going up to Newtown Police Boys, started to wander into the boxing room now and again, and Jack Blom and Snowy McFadden were the two trainers, and they had the likes of Billy and Denny Males, Freddie Casey, Jackie Bruce, some really, really good little amateur fighters at the time, and they were very good for us, being a couple of years behind them in age. And it was something I enjoyed. I used to go away to different towns boxing, and it was if we weren't doing that, we most probably would never got out of Erskineville at all.
Yeah, right. So you had a few amateur fights yourself on that, did you, mate?
Mate, I did. I enjoyed that, but when I became a trainer, I know that God, there is a God, because he got me in the right side of that ring on there.
Yeah, right.
I mean, there's nowhere to hide in that ring, is there, Johnny?
There's nowhere at all, mate. You can run, but you can't hide in there, mate.
The old saying. And I always remember, once when I was at South and you were there, we had a chat somewhere, and you offered me to come and train with you whenever I like. And I never forgot that, mate. That's the sort of guy you are.
That's how we all should be, isn't it, really?
Yeah. And talking of boxing, who you've trained, who are some of the greats you've trained, mate? We all know the two big ones, but we'll let you tell us. Jeffrey Fenwick, the Marek Formola, and the great Kostya Zou.
Yeah, undoubtedly they were the two great ones, and I think that, we used the slogan great a little bit too easily, but they were great, and they would have been great in any era. And there's a kid called Justin Rousell that I had on. I know that Justin was good enough to be a world champion, young Eddie Hoonan. Oh, the list goes on. Jimmy Reynolds from England come over with us, and the gym was always packed with kids that could really, really fight and box as well.
Yeah. Mate, speaking of Jeff Fenwick, you went to a State of Origin one night with him. Can you enlighten us a little bit on that story?
Yeah, mate, I can. Jeff was going to fight up in Brisbane, and Bill wanted us to come and watch the game, and when we got there, it was a really cold night, and anyhow, he came back with a whatever there was of 4, 5, 6 or whatever, and he threw 6 New South Wales hats, and we all put them on, and subsequently, when the game was over, I was, we were all just walking out of the stadium, and got onto the streets, and going to our car, and a bloke hit me from behind. I don't know, must have been a tackle or something. And I went down, and took the skin off my hands, my nose and my forehead. And as I sort of looked up to see what was happening, I seen he got, it was the worst thing he ever done, because he got about a size 12 and a half right into the head. And then the bloke that done it hit him a couple of times, and he was laid out like a Canningburg's carpet. And,
Jeffrey, give him a serving, eh?
No, it was Johnny Sattler.
John Sattler.
Oh.
Yeah. So he,
oh, there,
so
yeah.
he had a big front rower that I don't think that kid would be doing that anymore, whoever he was, if he survived it.
Sounds like a goose, eh? Huh? Got what he deserved.
Yeah, we had a long neck, so I suppose he was.
There you go, mate. Now, I was a big fan of Kosazu when he come along. He must have been thanking the heavens when he dropped in your lap, mate. What sort of a fighter was he? The power he had in both hands was incredible.
He had a lot of power in both hands, as you say. He was most probably one of the best thinking fighters you'd ever seen. You know, he turned it into a game of chess, as strange as that sounds, but he knew when he was going to jump on you. And it was one fight there. It was a very hard fight, and we got into maybe the ninth or tenth round. And anyhow, when he was going out for the next round, he just said to me, "I've got him, Johnny. This was it." And he knew, like, he'd being up close and personally, he was able to know what he had to do, and he did it. And once he most probably one of the great finishers of a fight that ever lived. Like, they if he hit him with the right one, well, they stayed hit.
Yeah, he sure did. He was one of the greats, mate. And just your association with football. Now, there's a photo that we're looking at here, and you know a lot of the same mates that me and Brownie do. There's a photo of Tezza Hill, Geordie Peets, Manoa Thompson, Woodsy, Tricky, Trindle, and Jeff Fennick and Kosazu. So you know a lot of the same. We know a lot of the same guys from the area.
Yeah, and a wonderful lineup of talent there, wasn't it? Got to know all those kids young, and gee whiz, young Terry Hill. It's you know, you can still see these kids running onto the Sydney cricket ground and whatever. And Geordie Peets, we're all aware that Manoa Thompson is Jared Haynes' dad, and just the talent just is from them all, didn't it?
Geordie was a good boxer too, Johnny, wasn't he?
Very good puncher, Geordie, and yeah, he was. And as I say, the father and son continues with them, because Geordie's young bloke Nathan was certainly a good little footballer for South Sydney, and then I think Parramatta, and now the Titans. And it must have been something with the factories that we had in Erskineville and Redfern that made these kids so good. I don't know.
That's it.
What about the Woods brothers, young Nat? We all know that Garve, I think you trained Garve for a while, but Nat packs a bit of a punch too.
Gee whiz, mate, there's one thing that when that UFC came in, I've got to tell you, I'm not a great lover of that, but if we would have threw that McGregor, he'd go 20 seconds with Nat. Nat would just eat him alive. He's, he's just something very, very special, Nathan. And young Garth, in my association with the fight game, I suppose the biggest spectacle that and performance wise for where Garth was at the time he entered that contender series to winning it and then knocking out Anthony Mundine was the cherry on the cake. But
that was awesome.
People talk about winning the contender and knocking out Anthony, but he fought a bloke prior to that to get into the last couple of fights, and he was a Russian, and he was, by ring experts, was the meanest bloke on the planet, and he was unbeaten, and mate, the referee should have stopped the fight at the before the end of the first round. Garth just battered him. It was something that I never thought Garth could do, but like, you know, Garth wasn't 100% mentally and physically, but he got better with every fight, and that was a performance and a half, although it went for a few weeks. Just Garth just kept on. He really wanted that, and it just shows you that if you want something really bad, and you give it your best shot, you can do it. It was one of the great things in my life to be a little part of that.
Part of it, yeah. And you mentioned Nath was something special, so he probably had to choose between rugby league and boxing. Did he? Did he ever? Was there ever a time then when Nathan Wood was going to enter the ring and have a few fights?
Yeah, mate. I was privy to seeing Nathan as a kid come through, and I just cannot believe that sides let Nathan go the way they did. He was lacking weight, but he was putting it on through hard work. He was bulking up, and I went and seen Nat playing in England, and I was the proudest bloke in England. He was just absolutely superb, and he skill that he'd got, and the heart. Well, he had the heart of a lion. He was a lot of Tommy Radonegas in Nat. He was a great leader, a very good leader, and he's no doubt he wanted to play for South, but I don't think he ever got the chance. But that's where he would have loved to be.
You obviously watch a lot of rugby league. You rugby league mad like the other two blokes in this room with me, but these days, who would make a good boxer, in your opinion, these days, mate, out of some of these rugby league stars running around?
Well, yeah, you look at Gallen, and Gallen's done very well in a short period of time, and the good thing with Gallen is he's made plenty of money out of it. But, you know, I trained Billy Johnson for a while, and Billy, he would have won the Australian title, but it was a he got disqualified in the last round. He was about 8 points clear on every judge's card. He only had to stand on his feet to win it. And the other fellow was, I think it was they reeled it a late shot or something. But he was a little bit hard done by, but then again, that's how it was. Yeah, at this time, mate, I don't know, but I was privy to having a little bit to do with another little Indigenous kid from South in the area, and I forget his name, Wes Patton.
Oh yeah, Wes.
Oh yeah.
And Wes, I was asked once the same question that you asked me, and at the time I said, Wes Patton, and the bloke said, why is that? And I said, well, he's got a big heart, and he's very, very fast on his feet and hands, like a typical Indigenous kid. The reporter said to me, is he real fast, is he? I said, well, I'll put it to you this way. After 15 metres, he'd be right up there with Usain Bolt. Yeah. And if the coppers were chasing him, he'll be in front of him by the 75-metre mark.
That's unreal. Yeah.
Big art, Wes Patton. He played on about 60 kilos ring and wet. And he played some pretty good footy too. He just probably didn't get back-to-back seasons in. But
But
he was a courageous little fellow. I used to love watching him play. He never knew what he was going to do on the field.
He had it all, didn't he? Yeah,
he had it all. Good.
And we just mentioning footballers that could have been boxers just brought back memories of holding the pads for Ian Roberts. When he used to hit the pad, it used to hurt. You'd be thinking, geez, I'm glad this bloke's not laying into me. So he could throw a punch to Big Iron.
I did the same thing. I did a bit of training with Ian, and you put him today, I'm sure that he would have been bigger than Gallen, but Ian was very, very good, mate. But he would have been a good chance of earning a quid other than football. And I think that if you look at Ian and you want to know anything, maybe it'd be a good thing to bring up Gary Jack. He might be able to enlighten
us. Yeah, just have a look at the photos of the aftermath. Yeah,
mate. Johnny, you mentioned before the Newtown Jets, and one of their favourite sons was Tommy Brodonicus. Mate, have you got any stories about Tommy you can enlighten us on?
There's no doubt that, in my opinion, the greatest competitor. As I said before, I thought there was a lot of Tommy in that wood. You know, when Tommy he came to our joint, and we had a good coach in Warren Ryan, and Warren used to talk a lot about how he taught us to play, but Tommy was the one that taught us to win.
Yeah.
And you could see it in two seasons. Everyone listened to Tom, everybody, and it was that come on, not go on. And I think he turned 70 yesterday, Tommy. So,
oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, with all the battles that he's had in front of him, and he gets on top of anything that's hard to do, Tommy will do it. Like, and he had a great association at Newtown with Cole Murphy, and to this day, they love each other like you love your missus. They're very, very close, very close.
Yeah, Murph, another character. He was at South when I got there in 86, and he's another memorable man.
Yeah,
the great
Murph.
Yeah, well, don't ask me for any stories about
that. You can't tell them on the radio.
Yeah, it's good to hear you talk about Tommy like that, because some of the younger people don't really know about how tough and how good he was. They see the Tommy the larrikin now and all the stories now, but, yeah, he was one of the greats, wasn't he?
Oh, look, he was, you know. He's, he doesn't get credit for the... mate, he was a good player. He was skillful, but because of his toughness, that a lot of people think that that's all he had. But, you know, he's got much more than just the toughness.
Mate, what's Johnny Lewis up to these days? Is still training?
We're all locked in.
Yeah, that's hard, yeah.
I'm drawing ducks on the wall and feeding them at the moment. But hopefully we can get rid of this rotten virus and in due time and... get this country back to what it should be. We just got to hope and pray that it happens. Like, sometimes we get a bit of a buzz that it's getting better, then we go down a slump. But I think we're in good hands, so we'll just wait and see what transpires.
Yeah, I think majority of Australians, especially over that Easter long weekend, John, would have been tough for everyone. And I think I've got to give all Australians a pat on the back. I think they did a fantastic job, and that virus seems like we're slowly getting on top of it, and I think we'll get there one day, mate. Thanks for joining us on Rabbitohs Radio. Thanks for all your time, mate.
Lovely. Any time at all. Up south, mate.
Yeah. Up the bunnies. And just so when the virus does finish, mate, are you still going to keep training, or are you going to hang up the gloves at some stage?
Mate, I'm committed that, we were going to be well underway doing it, but... mate, got a good crew behind me, Garth Wood, myself, a good mate of mine, Abraham Ergen, and the policewoman, Renee, at South Sydney Police Force. We've gave her our word that we'll be there, and we'll be there 5 to 6 days a week, and we want to get work with the kids of Redfern and Waterloo and that again. So that's what I'll be doing, mate, and I'm looking forward to it.
No stopping you, champion. Okay, well, thanks again, mate. Thanks for joining us on Rabbitohs Radio.
I can't go without saying to Darren Brown, his father, and Dinger Bell, I've never seen a better combination on a football field. I think I would have been a star if I was inside of them. But anyhow, that's life, and we can look back on it with a lot of good memories.
Yeah,
that's unreal.
Good on you, Johnny. We got boxing in our blood as well. With, you know, obviously, Darby Brown.
Well, you know what, mate? When you talk of boxing in Australia, and you, for me personally, if you say what's the biggest spectacle, it's 3 15-round fights with Darby Brown and my favourite fighter, George Barnes.
George Barnes, yeah.
Finished up 2-1 to George. And these guys, they spared no quarter. That's 45 rounds of absolute punching like you've never seen. And with every fight, if you can get footage of it, they put their arms around each other and walk them to the corner. None of this jumping up on the ring and whatever.
Proper sportsmanship.
Yeah, wow. And
yeah, that's what it was about, mate.
Mate, I think we could have spoke to you for another hour. It's just I'll say goodbye and we'll talk about another topic. That was unreal about the Brown boxing dynasty.
Yep.
But we'll let you go, mate, and we really appreciate that. Thanks for your time, mate.
All right. Take care. Bye.
See you, Johnny.
Good on you, Johnny. Cheers, mate.
All right, welcome back, listeners. I think we were all treated to one of the real greats of Australian sport, let alone boxing, the great Johnny Lewis. And what about that bit at the end there where he talked about your... Who's Darby to you? Yeah, Darby Brown to you. Explain it to the listeners, mate.
Darby Brown is my dad's uncle.
Okay.
Yeah. So he was an Australian, like Johnny just said, an Australian champion in boxing. He's been inducted into the Australian Boxing Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Yeah, and he had some mad bouts with George Barnes.
You can hear that, yeah. Wow. So look him up there, listeners, Darby Brown. Darby Google Brown. It up. Yeah. You can find out a bit about Brownie's uncle.
45 rounds.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, well, that was three fights, over three fights.
Yeah.
So 15 rounds of just
that's
brutal.
That's an amazing saying. It was a bit of a trilogy, I guess you could call it.
George Barnes got the better of him, beat him 2-1. But, yeah, by all reports, they were great bouts.
That's boxing attrition at its greatest right there.
Yeah, and it's another example of, we're branching out a little bit, talking to other sporting identities, but Johnny tied it in there with the footy. He's a footy man as well.
Boxing's probably lost its luster over the years, but geez, we all grew up with boxing. Like I went on Netflix and found the great Roberto Duran documentary. It's like a movie about his life and that. You forget how good he was, Roberto Duran. What a warrior he was.
Unbelievable.
Come from poverty. Anyway,
but Johnny's an interesting guy. Proudly grew up around the streets of Urco. Knows a lot of our mates. Lost his team, the Newtown Jets. So, yeah, great story.
He was like a second father to all them boys that you mentioned. Manoa, Geordie. Sure. They were always up the police boys. You know? Kept them out of trouble.
That's right. So that's Newtown police boys has served the community for a very long time. And you can hear him. He doesn't sound like he's retiring anytime soon.
Well, he's going to do it down at Redfern Police Boys now.
Yep. Yeah, there you go.
Opposite Redfern Oval there.
Oh, you can't keep a good man down on Rabbitohs Radio.
Exactly.
All right, we'll go off to another break here on Rabbitohs Radio.
Rabbitohs Radio is proudly brought to you by Bourke Street Bakery. Export Freight Systems. Email Ian at efsau.com.au and mention Rabbitohs Radio. He'll take care of you. NG Farah have forged an enviable reputation for consistently delivering outstanding results. Reach out, speak up, educate, don't give up, burn brightly, be exceptional, rise. Rabbitohs Radio is proudly brought to you by The Juniors.
Welcome back, everybody. Our Rabbitoh of the Week, who wins a free coffee voucher for a month at any of the 14 Bourke Street Bakery stores, is Scott Singles. Now, Singles is a mate of ours. Chaps, he's your cousin.
My great cousin. I love you, Scotty.
Scotty, now,
big Rabbitohs fan. Big fan of the show.
Big fan of the show. And he sent us a photo during the week, which you might have saw on our story, and we're going to post that on the website. He was going for a walk listening to the podcast. So he had the earphones in. He had Rabbitohs apparel on. And he was walking along the coast. So it was a perfect picture of what you can do.
And he's on tough times, as we've spoken about all these airport workers. Scotty's without a job. Got no income coming in until it all gets sorted out with that third stimulus package. So shout out to Scotty. I've been out to plenty of football games with Scotty over the years. One of them comes to mind, actually. We went out there with his missus niece. And we're sitting away from majority of people, but when we start getting beat, Scotty really turns. Yeah. He starts swearing through his teeth. I think a few people had to pick up kids and walk them away because his language is pretty colourful. But we love that about you, Scotty. This passion
towards the opposition.
Oh, towards referees. The referees copped it. But,
And I remember we were at the...
He gives it to him.
Yeah. We were at the South game, the semi-final, when we beat the Chooks in 2014. And he's sitting up behind me, and I was quite inebriated, and I'm running up and down the sideline like a 12-year-old kid. And he said to me, "Should have seen you. You know, people just going, look at this bloke." It's like, I don't care. I was that excited. I don't care. But yeah,
he must have been going right off the out in first, Scotty, because he goes pretty mad out there.
Yes.
On you, Scotty.
Good on you, mate. Yeah, so you're going to go and get your coffee every day at any one of the 14 Bourke Street Bakery stores. He's been down there for a coffee and a feed with us to the Banks Meadow store, so he knows exactly where it is. And we've told you how good the food is there, so do yourself a favour. Try the pies, sausage rolls, sandwiches, muesli, honey. They've got it all in there.
And now we'll go to NRL News, brought to you by NG Farah.
Yes, and, well, the big news is that we just touched on before in Rabbitohs News, Brownie, is that they've NRL is kicking off again next month.
May 28 is the date. A lot of hurdles to be jumped before we kick off. You know, they'll be putting plans in place as we speak, where the players will be isolating. You know, who's going to be travelling and not travelling.
There's a lot to be ironed out between now and then. I brought something up on Twitter there the other day. Could we play games at Redfern Oval? There's no crowds.
Yeah, I don't see
if
why
we happen
can't.
To get a day fixture, why couldn't we have a game at Redfern Oval? We haven't played any games at Redfern. I think we had a couple in the 90s. There was a couple of actual premiership games in the 90s. Not too many. There was only two or three. Mm. We played the Crushers there once. People that didn't have any crowds and stuff.
I don't see why we can't, because the whole idea of the modern stadium is to accommodate the crowds. And if you don't have to accommodate the crowd, then we can play it anywhere, basically.
Mate, another great venue be Coogee Oval.
Yeah, Boralee.
What a spot.
I'll be happy at Boralee.
Mascot Oval?
Boralee, the home of the Botany Rams. Brownie, we could have a party at your joint on the corner there.
100%.
We'll get some scaffolding.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
In your
Vegas. Like Art Oval.
Yeah.
They didn't miss out.
Yeah, we'll get... that's right. Well, social distancing is all in vogue there, boys. We might have to get one scaffolding set up ourselves each. Anyway, just a thought there, boys. And the other one that comes to mind... NRL news-wise was Nick Politis asking the NRL, trying to influence Peter Vallandis there to scrap the points and start from zero.
Oh, what a joke. And it's an outrage.
I can tell you now, he got absolutely flogged there on social media, giving it to him just for being selfish and trying to put up a Roosters agenda. He knows it's going to be a shortened competition, and to make up those two games that they've already dropped, it's going to be... a pretty tough ask, which they can do. They've got the roster to do it. They won the comp last year.
Yeah.
And he tried to say that he rested Boyd Cordner because he knew they were going to scrap the points later on in the year. Come on, Nick.
Come on. And if the shoe was on the other foot, if they were on four competition points like your Parramatta's, the Cowboys.
I don't know.
The Knights.
Knights
are a good start.
If the shoe was on the other foot, they wouldn't want a bar of it.
Melbourne.
Yeah, so... but you know what? If it happens and they do, we all go back to 0 points, that'd be okay, because I don't think they're going to get any anyway.
Nah.
Taps, you've been an advocate of...
they haven't scored. Although they averaged down 1.5 tries a week so far. So, anyway. They want to sit there and bag us. But there's been some good Greek comedians over the years. Nick Giolopoulos, he was pretty funny, wasn't he? But I think you're right at the top of the tree there, Politis. Well done, son.
Yeah, shout out to you, Nick. Good luck, buddy.
We love your passion, but we don't want your opinion.
Oh, great show, boys. We've had two of the greats on and interesting chats. So
we punched another one out. They said we couldn't do it. We pulled it off.
That's right. And we just want to thank everyone for sticking with us. We know there's no footy on, but we're trying to keep everybody entertained with some interesting guys on the show, guys and girls, and some stuff on our socials to watch. And hopefully the footy will be back sooner rather than later, and we can get back to
talking about the
games.
Talking
about the games.
Keep supporting the Mighty Rabbits. If you're not a member, jump on board.
Glory, glory.
All right, Mava. Take us out, mate.
Rabbitohs Radio is hosted by Grant Chappell, Darren Brown, and me, Steve Maven, and is brought to you by Export Freight Systems, The Juniors, NG Farah, Rise Foundation, and Bourke Street Bakery. For more information on this episode, click the episode webpage in the show notes, and please remember to subscribe and leave us a review. We'd also like you to follow our Rabbitohs Radio Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube channel. We'll be back next week with another episode, and up the Mighty Rabbitohs.